This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, which means I am Ken Napsok.
And it means I am Joseph Scrimshaw. And it also means that this is one of our News and Q's episodes. Q's stands for questions. News stands for news. Things that are new. How are you, Ken?
That's a loaded question, sir. It's a loaded question. No, I'm doing okay. I always say good adjacent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I feel that acknowledges the bigger picture of the world and the bigger problems that you might be facing, your friends, your neighbors might be facing, but also it acknowledges that I like to look for the little joys every day.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's really good. Have I told you about rewatching Sound of Music, which I hadn't seen in like 1,000 years?
The hills of you have not.
I was going to go on about Sound of Music. This is not our Sound of Music breakdown episode. But there's a part where the oldest daughter, Liesl, is upset for reasons. And somebody asks her, how are you? And she says, just fair. And I thought, that's perfect. That's going to be my answer to how are you. Liesl's just fair.
I love it. Just fair to middling, all those terms. But it's good to remind yourself again every day, find the small joys. Today already, a good piece of toast. That's a good start to my day. A good piece of toast. I can take joy in that and build from there.
Yeah, my coffee was extra delicious this morning.
Nice. We are going to get into news and cues, like Joseph said. Before we do that, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. It's kind of like we're buying you your first round at the book bar.
Oh, no. Now I really want people to do this. And then, yeah, man, I want to go drink a book.
Yes, I also want to open up a book bar. You know, there's book coffee shops, but a book bar.
God, yeah. Oh, but discussion rooms in the back and, oh, geez. Okay, this is a whole fantasy thing for me now. I'm more than just fair now. I'm so excited thinking of a book bar.
Book bar, yeah, that'd be a great life adventure or a Star Wars adventure or both. Hey, man, how are you and what's life been like? What adventures have you been on this week? Any beautiful gardens that you've hung out in?
I have not hung out in any beautiful gardens, but, you know, we had, of course, Halloween, and I'm a big fan of the spooky holiday. My wife, Sarah, has really gone out of her way to make sure that we celebrate Halloween. She checked in with me about 7 times on Halloween, like, is your Halloween going okay? which it did. We had a nice walk around our neighborhood, which we walked around a couple times to see the Halloween decorations up. But we walked around right about dusk, you know, with masks, everything. It was nice to see that everything that we saw was safe. There were some really great Halloween displays and then like pictures or actually like skeletons. And then they would have like captions saying, sorry, no candy this year, but enjoy me.
Right.
The skeleton. So there's some stuff that was just displays. There are some extremely creative candy delivery systems. There's this one house. It's kind of looks like it should be in a forest. It's kind of got a little turret. It's almost like a little, it's a normal size house, but it's got a little mini castle vibe. And they had set up their railing. So a zombie's head was pinned to the end of the railing and the zombie's mouth was open. And then they could run the candy down. So it fell out of the zombie's mouth.
Oh, wow.
We just saw the people who lived there, like out there testing their zombie's mouth to make sure it would work for kids. And we saw a couple kids with parents all masked up, dressed up and, you know, getting candy from a distance. So it was nice to see that nobody was taking huge risks. There weren't many people out, but they were still trying to capture that spirit of Halloween and that community. We saw these 3 kids run by and one was an astronaut. One was a witch. And then one kid just had a crossbow.
He's getting ready for the week. He wasn't, that wasn't Halloween. He was training for the week that's coming.
He
right?
was training. Yeah. He wasn't like a character from Walking Dead. He had no other like special clothes. He just had modern child clothes and then a toy crossbow. Important that it's a toy crossbow. That yeah. cracked me up. And there was just a huge, amazing display that some neighbors not too far from us had. And we saw them walking out. And again, like no candy, just putting out the display and saying hello to people from a distance. An adult witch with a mask. And we're like, hey, this is great. It's absolutely beautiful that put that display up. And she was like, I just wanted something to be normal this year. Yeah. You know, it's so great. She's like, I think this is normal. Your yard full of spiders with glowing red eyes and massive frightening pumpkin and, you know, skeletons with just spears driven through their chest. This is a beautiful version of normal.
I like that normal.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
So that was a good life adventure, just enjoying Halloween and getting that sense of community and that sense of spirit of like things aren't normal, but let's still try to find fun and joy.
Yeah, again, small joys. It might be a crackle candy bar in a gift bag that you get from a distance, but it's a small
a distant crackle.
Yes, from a distance.
Yeah, yeah. And then Star Wars adventure, I had bought a couple figures and I saved them up. I finished writing something right before Halloween that I was really wanted to finish during the month of November, a longer writing project that I really had to force myself to work hard, stay up late, get up early kind of thing to finish it. And I did. So then I let myself open up the last couple figures I bought, which is including the Remnant Stormtrooper from Mandalorian, the Dirty Stormtrooper. And from back in the day, the hologram Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I was very happy to add some new friends to my collection.
Friends and Star Wars friends. Even better.
Real life friends and friends, small plastic friends.
Small plastic friends. That's That needs to be, that's some kind of figure show. Is that out there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look for us to stream from the book bar with our new action figure show, Small Plastic Friends.
We're creating a lot of new projects.
Hey, this is practically a business meeting. This is great.
It really is. Oh, and everyone's here listening.
That's how about yourself? What were your life and or Star Wars adventures?
You know, Halloween is not one of my favorite holidays, but I am with someone who that is her favorite holiday. So we do what we can to make it the best. And we had a fire pit. It was a, what is it, a new moon, a blue moon, a full moon, an IPA ale. I don't know what was going on out there, but great stuff out here. I could see the moon in the clouds. And so we had a nice little fire pit out there. And then we watched one of our favorite shows, Ghost Adventures. You know, we love bros chasing ghosts, but this one was at the Tiger King exotic animal park. So they did that. This is recent. They shot it during the lockdown. And, you know, I have not seen the Netflix series, but Grace has, and she also listened to the podcast. She's a true crime aficionado. So it was like all of her worlds coming together. Halloween, Ghost Adventures, Tiger King. And a nice night indoors celebrating Halloween safely. So we made it work, and that's all we can all do is make things work.
Yeah, she got to see some true ghost crime with tigers,
and s'mores with some vegan marshmallows. It was a good night. It was a good night.
Yeah, that's awesome. Anything Star Wars outside? It's always weird lately to talk about any Star Wars adventures when, you know, we're recording a lot. New shows like Mandalorian are coming out. But any other moments that are not directly related to us recording in the podcast that you had?
Well, yes, but it's probably going to be related to something we eventually record, I'm sure. you and I got copies. I don't know if yours came. We haven't even talked about it off air, but I finally got the Papa Hidalgo Fascinating Facts book came to my mailbox.
Ooh, yeah, then mine should be arriving today because I ordered them on the same day.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I got, and I'll tell you what, it's, we're going to go through it, and there's a lot of stuff that's already made headlines that we even talked about, but there's a lot of just fun stuff in here, and some of it you've heard, some of it you haven't heard in a while, and some of it is brand new, and also there's cool little timelines. It's like Anakin Skywalker's timeline, and I just like that kind of stuff to like lay it down on a map and then see, oh, he was 45 when he looked 70. All right. people age a little different in Star Wars land. So it was, anyways, it was a lot of fun at read. In fact, I didn't intend to read every page. I didn't comprehend every page, but I read every page, and it's that kind of quick read, you know, and
yeah,
which is how it's designed. So hats off to Pablo. You know, he's an interesting character around these parts, but you know, he loves this stuff and he knows this stuff, and it's a great little book. And I can't wait for you to get it and we can exchange notes on it there.
Yeah, no, I am looking forward to that. And that sounds like the right kind of read for me right now, cause it's just so busy, and I appreciate all the great Star Wars content that's coming out, but something that's just like, that's a little shorter in just little tidbits of information to really fire your imagination. That sounds great.
Yeah, it's a pint-sized book. It fits in one hand very easily, and I like that too. So,
all right, one hand book, other hand beer. I'm ready to go.
I'm ready for the Force Center Presents Book Bar. It's gonna be Book Bar by FC. That's gonna be like our Vegas lounge.
I can't wait until our fashion line comes out. Then
we need a Brian Ward poster stat. Oh boy. Dengar reading a book and drinking a beer. That's what we need.
Yeah, it'll happen in Mandalorian eventually. Might be season 10, but Dengar reads a book will happen in the Mandalorian.
It will indeed. So we're going to go into Star Wars news right now. And I, you know, not a lot. I think a lot of focus was on Mandalorian, as it should be, in chapter 9. We did our big discussion and breakdown and reaction review, all those buzzwords that you want to use, but really it was a long form discussion that we had a blast. You know, and it's so funny because you and I, for the first time ever, came down on so-called opposite sides on one particular issue of the show. And everyone, even in our Discord, reached out and was just like, I love how you guys talked about it.
Oh, good.
And you handled it. And in our Discord, which is attached to our Patreon page, if you want to join the Force Center Patreon page and get into the Discord, it's quite frankly one of the best kind of communities for Star Wars fans and all all of our listeners. You know, it's varied, and some of the reactions are what people will react to. And to see the discussion there was kind of fun for me to monitor all for the week. And when I say monitor, I just swing through and be like, cool, no one's killing each other because no one's going to do that here in 4-7. Big disagreements. So that was kind of the dominant news headline was Mando, 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 which just leads into this last minute addition to our news rundown, Mando Mondays.
Yeah.
Has been doing this, StarWars.com. They released some new Mando stuff every Monday morning. We're going to just kind of scroll through it. You know, you can get a Build-A-Bear Mandalorian, Build-A-Bear Mandalorian exclusive pram, which I want. It's a plush Baby Yoda and a plush pram. Man, I need that.
Yeah.
Good.
That's real good. I like any of the baby Yoda stuff that comes with the pram. This bear is amazing, partially because in the image, he's got his little paw up as if he's saying hello, and then the pulse rifle in the other paw, which is like,
yeah,
we can be friends, or there's a pulse rifle. Take your choice, hello, says Mando Bear.
I will disintegrate you. Yeah. That's that. Galaxy of Heroes is a little game I don't really play right now, but I know a lot of people do. And Queel has been added to that. And later on, they're going to add IG-11, Mandalorian Greef Karga, and Cara Dune in the playable heroes in the fan favorite strategy game. I know it looks good. The Queel looks good, man. I like that. It means something to me when characters we get to meet, Joseph, are suddenly now in other things like video games, because it's just kind of next. Well, they're definitely part of the Star Wars universe for me.
Yeah. I mean, this is a part of the history of Star Wars, and one of the things that makes it not unique, but really Star Wars is the characters. We meet them on the screen. We like them. They're in a story, but then they live on in all sorts of weird ways, everything from a plush bear to, you know, a little strategy game on your phone. And it's cool to see these new characters from The Mandalorian take that heritage of Star Wars characters of living on in lots of different ways.
Love that. And living on in the figures, which brings us to like your favorite figure. Talk about it.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is so great because my finger has been hovering over the buy button on the vintage Mandalorian figure that they've had out, the 3 3/4, which is my favorite. But they've had him in the armor that he only has for the first couple chapters rather than this silver armor that he spends most of the series in. So I am thrilled that they've got this new vintage Mando that he's in the silver armor. So I cannot wait to pick him up. He makes me so happy just looking at him. And all the Mando action figures, I love Star Wars action figures, obviously. But that this Kenner, this vintage look, the retro look, anything that connects it back to the action figures that Favreau and Filoni played with and a lot of the other people working on the show that inspired this, there's this great connection, full circle, that I love. So I'm so excited to smash that buy button on this action figure.
It's hard to turn away from that packaging. It's just so weird. It just strikes something deep inside the soul. You're like, oh yeah, I am 7 again. Please give it to me. Please, I want to be 7 forever.
Yeah, and just such a cool figure. And I've got my Black Series that's sitting on my coffee table, and I took my Baby Yoda Black Series out of the package, so Mando's holding him now. So I get to look at that Mando all the time, and I want this one, so I'm excited for it.
That's great. There is also the Mandalorian Nerf gun, which is fun. I actually have a couple of those Nerf guns over the years. I don't do anything with them. They're in a garage right now waiting to be shot, but they're fun. And then the final big one here. Well, we got a Baby Yoda pin, a child pin that is a 3D pin that you can get as well. But I think the big one here, also by price tag, is the Hot Toys 1/4 scale Mandalorian figure, which it comes with the child, which has that jacket and the collar, and it's all real because that's what they do there, Sideshow and Hot Toys. It's got the satchel to put the Baby Yoda in. Man, yeah, I wish I had the space, the money, and the ability just to commit to something this big. But
I wish I had the physical and emotional space in my life for these toys.
So, yeah, there you go. That is the Mando Monday.
Yeah.
It's fun to see a new collection of things you just can't commit your allowance money to buy every week, but it's fun.
Yeah. No, and I was wondering how they're going to do it. It makes sense. They did the whole, video with a lot of the actors and creators from the show last week. And then this is great to just have this slow drip every Monday. I'm excited for that.
Yeah. They also released those Mandalorian character posters and Cobb Vanth and everything. And that was cool too. Adding great shots too. Like, who doesn't like a good backdrop of Banthas on your computer?
Yeah.
Suggest checking that out. In some of the main stories that we're looking at right now, Meet the Baddies, High Republic Villains Revealed. We already knew about the Nihil, spelled N-I-H-I-L, and they also got a reference in the new Star Wars mainline, which Charles Soule's writing. There is a Tarkin talks about them, which is the connections to the High Republic, and Luke goes to a temple that was probably we're going to learn more about in the High Republic. So that stuff's starting to emerge. We already knew it, but now we get a little bit more details over at StarWars.com. Dan Brooks sitting down with Lucasfilm Publishing creative director Michael Siglain. And Michael says the team, which included the publishing side, the story group, the authors, everyone who sat and really has been working on High Republic for years now, they asked the question, what scares the Jedi? And they wanted it to be something new. Joseph, from a distance, what do you think scares the Jedi?
Yeah, I mean, this is a quote that they've thrown around for a while, and I really wanted it to be that the Jedi were scared not only by someone who represented some level of physical threat and was hard to maybe physically defeat, but more importantly, the Jedi would be scared by something that attacks their philosophy or something that their philosophy of, how they go about protecting peace and justice. It is challenging for them on a philosophical level to deal with the villains has always been what I want that to mean of what scares the Jedi. Not like, oh no, they're too big and it takes too much energy to throw them over. Like, yeah, that's a part of it. But the what is philosophically frightening about the villains I've been wondering about and hoping that that's the direction they're going to take since I first heard this quote of what scares the Jedi, which I think was in the big first reveal. Cause I remember we did a breakdown with Alex and Molly of Star Wars Explained on that first big reveal. And I remember us all talking about that of what scares the Jedi. So this is so great to get just a little bit more information about the Nihil and the total reveal of this other villain. So we can start diving into, yes, to me, it does seem like it's philosophical reasons as well as physical, practical reasons that the Jedi would be scared of these foes.
I like that. Well, let's take a dive. First up here are the Drengir. That's what I'm saying. I'm sure in Star Wars, it will be different than what you think and then change later on. The Drengir, D-R-E-N-G-I-R. How would you say that, Joseph?
Drengir.
All right. We're in the same boat there. All right. So as the Jedi struggle to deal with the aftermath of the Great Disaster, which we know kind of launches this entire series of stories, a new creeping terror rises from the ground beneath their feet. The Drengir are sentient plant life who are looking to reap a terrible harvest across the galactic frontier. This, and then design, they got the design. It looks like, you're going to need Monster Squad to go get it. It is it's something different. What do you think about this? This is a monster, but also a plant life. A lot going on. And I didn't write down here, but it directly affects the fate of a High Republic, High Jedi Master, High Council member.
Yeah, so being tied to it in some way. I love this. This is so great from a lot of different perspectives. Sounds like from the article, Kevin Scott was one of the main architects of the Drengir. Of pushing them into prominence here in the High Republic with all the other storytellers. I really like them because I think Star Wars always has to have that new and old, and it's got to continue to kind of pull from the different other genres that have been out there for more pop culture, bizarre storytelling. And the plant life is kind of perfect for Star Wars because Star Wars is so much about the organic. So it's kind of perfect for Star Wars, but it's also kind of new to Star Wars, but it's also kind of old. Kevin Scott in particular, being a big Doctor Who fan, there's a Doctor Who monster called the Crinoid, which is, out of control plant life, which itself was a riff on the British horror story book and movie Day of the Triffids. This kind of connects to in my mind, to Poison Ivy stuff from mm-hmm. Batman stories. You know, it's sometimes those plants are sentient. It's mostly her advocating that plant life deserves, you know, the same level of respect. That's a general theme that pops up in lots of different storytelling of, you know, what if somebody believed that plant life is being looked down upon by other kinds of sentient beings? So it's pulling from this great history from all sorts of different sources and putting this Star Wars spin on it. So I really love it. It's also got some connections to cosmic horror, Cthulhu, Lovecraft kind of elements of monsters that scare us because they work so differently than us. You know, we're always scared of things that we can't quite understand. And if, you know, these monsters aren't just like, hi, I'm these plants and these tentacles and these vines, and that's what I am. But if it's more like, is it a connected species? Then they can constantly change, mutate their form. And, you know, you're not dealing with, this is Ted the Drencher, and here's Beth over here, but they're like merging and changing. That gets into this different, like, it's scary on this different level because it is so different from us, and we need to understand it to deal with it.
Yeah, the idea of the Jedi trying to connect with every, you know, the Force, which, you know, connects every part of the galaxy, right? And here you got, oh, look at those nice plants. Oh, it's trying to kill me now. And just immediately having that kind of conflict with the organic and stuff like all the things, all the great examples you're given here too, of what it could be. That's just really different. I can't immediately predict what's going to happen. With the Nile, we're going to talk about it in a second. I actually really like what's coming out with the Nile, but you know, you can look and go, all right, at some point there's going to be a fight.
Yeah.
This one, I mean, sure, I guess you could hack and slash a sentient plant life monster, but how, you know, just it sets up something entirely different. So I'm more excited, and that's not necessarily my thing. I'm not a huge Cthulhu fan. I've played a few of the games where I've had to roll dice to kill the monsters, but it's not generally my thing. But I look at this and I go, it's just, you know, it's reminiscent of that in a cool way, but it's, I personally just can't predict right away what it's going to be. And so now I'm intrigued. Now I want to turn the page.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're really touching on what I think is going to challenge them specifically philosophically or scare them. Mm-hmm. If it is the kind of thing where there is a mound of sentient plants that want something and the Jedi can't actually stop it, because if you hack you hacked apart those plants, good for you. The sentience just moved over to some other plants to the left. Like, you can't just cut them down. So that's scary because it's on a practical level how you deal with them. But philosophically, if it is like the Jedi are like, we respect all life, and you know, some sentient plant life basically takes over an entire planet, they you know, in theory, that you would want to just, the Jedi would just want to let it be and let it be its own life form. But if that life form wants to kill, like, do we need to devastate all vegetation, you know, vegetation on a planet? That's really not our philosophy, but that vegetation is going to kill everybody there. Damn, what are we going to do? That challenges them.
Yeah. What's the, we already got one of the Jedi listed in the High Republic that feels really connected with nature and sees himself as a tree, right? It's the Wookiee Jedi. So you drop him in the middle of that, right? Like, it's interesting. It's something that I would not have gone. This is why I'm not on a writing team writing the High Republic. I would not have been like, let's have plant monsters. But it's more than that. And what you're describing, it's more than that. It's going to represent a lot of different things and challenges. So it's cool. That's different. The Dread Jeer. And that's going to be a cool figure. Just a blobby plant monster.
Yep. He-Man's Moss Man. Step out of the way. Here come the Drenjir.
In addition to the Drenjir, we got the Nile, as I said, the aforementioned Nile, and we learned a little bit more. They have three main divisions called Tempest. The divisions are called Tempest, which are run by captains, and they answer to Tempest Runners. And as mentioned before, they are marauders and raiders, but they answer to their own code of take what we want. So first I want to ask you there, Joseph, knowing a little bit more, we are familiar with the Marauders, Raiders. You know, this is a new frontier type of vibe. They're pirates out there, Vikings, if you will, whatever example you want to give. We've known that. But to know that there is rank, structure, a code that they aspire to stick to and work to and believe. What do you think about that, knowing a little bit more about the Nile?
Yeah, I like that they have, a you know, playing around with these ideas that pop up in Star Wars a lot between the Mandalorian and the Jedi and the Bounty Hunters Guild of, like, we have a code, we have a structure, this is the way we do it, but our code is take everything we want, and that's it. That's the, you know, primary mission is really cool, because I think that's going to challenge the Jedi in a different way than the Drengir, because, you know, the Jedi want to find common ground, right? They're trying to keep peace and justice and defend when possible. But it's interesting to me if the galaxy's in a little bit of chaos because of the great disaster, and these, you know, Nile are just popping up suddenly and violently. That's not like a planet that's having a disagreement that the Jedi can go mediate, right? They can't really defend if they're just popping up suddenly. So then there's that choice of, like, okay, do we have to be proactive? Do we have to go find out where the Nile live and, you know, take them out? And also, if the Nile's whole philosophy is take what you want, that's not a philosophy that the Jedi can meet halfway. So that's scary for them to face philosophically of, we've maintained peace and justice for a long time while we've been able to live up to our ideals. And here's someone who's going to force us into, you know, you got to fight us, live or die, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if you want to save other people, you got to take us down.
Yeah. The conflict, despite what we maybe thought growing up in the 80s, not what Jedi love, running into fight.
No, they want to, the Jedi want to sit somewhere peacefully on a nice lawn, you know, maybe reading a book or discussing philosophy. And now pirates might suddenly come out of nowhere and start slaughtering people, and the grass under the ground while they're talking philosophy might start attacking them. It's not a peaceful time for the poor Jedi.
And for me, it is, I enjoy the idea of there's a little bit more of a structure than what was originally pitched, or, you know, again, they're dropping little bits of information along the way. My view of them until this moment were crazy, kind of rar pirates going to go cause problems in the galaxy, which is great. I get that as a threat on the surface. I don't want it to sound like it's the Empire or a bad guy army, but like to have some desires behind what they're doing, have some purpose, a little structure, a little focus, to have leaders. I don't need it to be just simple, you know, galaxy domination, galaxy conquest, but it just adds a little weight for me that I enjoy, knowing that it's not just craziness. Because I, you know, I'm one that's always like, I don't like the idea of, we're going to get Kenobi series. He's going to fight a bunch of space pirates. Like, oh, great. But I want something more than that, you know?
Right.
A dust up in the street. I want some deep. And so, right. So we have a almost an opposing army, and it's not going to be the Clone Wars again or generals in the Jedi ranks. It's going to be something a little different, but just to know that there's a purpose towards or purpose behind the marauding and what they're working toward. That's what I like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great that they have a specific philosophy and maybe they're building to something, but maybe it's not galactic domination. Yeah. Maybe it's just like, yeah, we want to be the best pirates ever and we are terrorizing everyone everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, and good point. I don't necessarily need someone trying to sit on the throne of this galaxy, but just to have a little bit more. And at the head of the ranks, we want you to meet Marcion Rowe. Marcion Rowe is maybe how we'll say it now, right now. I don't know. How you want to say that one, Joseph?
Marcion Rowe.
Okay, there we go. We'll run these through a symposium of name pronunciations in the film. The current Eye of Nile is what he is, and that is like his father before him. So now we have legacy going on here. Much of what makes the Nile more than raiders comes from him, says the article. And then Daniel Jose Older adds that the Nile are truly unlike any Star Wars villains we've seen before. So, man, and this goes back to what scares the Jedi and everything there. So how do we feel, putting this all together, Joseph, how do we feel some marauders and raiders that take what they want will scare the Jedi? We got how the plant life will scare the Jedi, but how are they going to scare the Jedi? We talked about some philosophy already here, but what are you thinking here?
Yeah, I really think it is that that they do have a society. They do have a culture. So in theory, the Jedi would want to respect that. But if their culture is pop out of the shadows where there's crisis and rob from innocent people, terrorize innocent people, kill innocent people. On the one hand, the Jedi are like, we are the guardians of peace and justice. So we got to do something about that. but yeah. we can't figure out what to do about that because we can't bring them to the table for a philosophical discussion. Their philosophy is screw you, I take what I want, you know, right. And you can't meet halfway with somebody whose only philosophy is take what I want. You can't be like, how about if you just take half what you want? Like last time you visited this planet, you killed 50 people. Could you just do 25? Could you just murder 25? Like that's not a philosophy you can meet halfway, but that really endangers the Jedi's philosophy of wanting to only use the Force for knowledge and defense. To say the only way we can do that is figure out their culture. We got to figure out where this Eye of Nile is and why is he the center of things? We got to go and cut him down. But that's not what we do. Like, I think that's where it's going to come from is my guess.
Yeah, I like that there. I'm really intrigued by, you know, this little curveball that's come in late into the marketing, obviously baked in the story of the Nile on one side and now the sentient plant life on the other. It's a weird, wonderful little sci-fi, which Star Wars is and isn't at times. I don't know. It's an interesting landscape. Because I think I've just been excited about the High Republic being a place for Jedi to really question and think about what's going on in their brains and hearts and souls. And now we got this stuff going on. I like it. I don't know. I'm getting more and more excited for the series.
Yeah. These seem like good villains to tackle some of those Jedi philosophies questions, but make them active. And I kind of like this. I like the Drenger were an idea that we're like, they'll be there too. And that they've grown a little bit because that's an interesting way to challenge the Jedi. If they really are at their peak of just, it's really a, when it rains, it pours. We got a couple problems that we don't know exactly how to deal with. And we're trying to expand the galaxy. And there was just this great accident. And now we got these two different threats. Yeah. It's a great way to challenge them is just to put too much on their damn plates.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Out of generations of peace. And now they got this, it's going to be, as the galaxy expands, which again is something I really like too. Just it is a new frontier going on. And on a very surface level, Marchion Roe, his design, kind of Sidon Ithano looking there. I really like that design. That's a design that I'd love to see pop up elsewhere too. And just have the character. I'm not already saying get him to a Mandalorian season 7. I'm just saying, I like it. That's a good Star Warsy design.
It's a very good Star Wars design, really building on what's come in before, but still looks unique. And I like also that the artwork has made it clear and some of these interviews that this is also like Mandalorians. This is a little bit of a creed, right? Because it's not a species. I mean, we're seeing Twi'leks and humans and Zabrax who are a part of this.
Right. Yeah. No, I like that too. An all-star team of villains. I'll take that. Final thought out of this one, because they are asking this. I think our answers, particularly some stuff you've said here, it kind of would filter its way down to this answer here. But what makes a good Star Wars villain to you?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. I think it is that combination of the new and the old. I like that Star Wars takes things that we are kind of deeply familiar with as a culture that maybe even taps back as far as, you know, ancient myths that different cultures have told and then adds it. The weird Star Wars flavor on top of it. And I kind of like that the big reveal is the Jedi are going to fight pirates and evil plants. Because it's straightforward genre stuff, but they're putting this Star Wars spin on it that ties the villains into challenging the kind of thematic ideas of Star Wars, of the organic is usually in Star Wars, the place you go to reconnect with truth and light and nature and the natural way of things and, you know, turning that on its head. And now the organic is this insidious creeping problem beneath your feet. And, you know, the pirates in a time where the galaxy is expanding and the Jedi are trying to bring as many people into the Republic as possible to have people like, we don't want to be a part of anything. We just want to take things. I think a good villain is one that has these deep mythic roots, just plain old looks cool, looks scary, and then challenges some of the core themes.
Yeah, I'll say what I just love about what's going on here in the High Republic. What's intriguing to me, and then try to answer my own question here. But just we're so used to you know, I'll take the prequels and set them aside a little bit on this answer, but the original trilogy, the sequel trilogy, it is so much the bad guys, the villains, the bad team are kind of the ones in control for the most part. First Order, you could debate. They kind of emerge and take control, but you know, they take a military control, militaristic control of the company, of the country, of the galaxy a little bit later on in the series. And our heroes are always trying to take things back, right? They're always resisting it, which is beautiful and works well. So to have that kind of reversed right here is something that's interesting to me. Then just on the surface of the Nile might be trying to, they're the rebels in a way here. I don't know. It's different for me. Again, separatist republic, you could look at it a little differently, but then, so it is what it is. Like I'm thinking, what's my favorite Star Wars villains? Really for me, it's Kylo Ren because of I like a villain that's going to tell you something that might not be wrong. It's not right, but you look at it and go, okay, you're confusing me. You're making me think, and I need to find my way to the light side and through your garbage, but you're putting some stuff up there that's coming from you, coming from your journey. And so I'm trying to take that from Kylo. Darth Vader's a little different. Palpatine's not right, but you know what I mean? Like he's a menace and he's going to get in your head. To take that. And if the Nile have any of that, and who knows if the Drenji are going to speak, I'm a plant. But even if they do, are they going to have something like, hey, it's our galaxy too kind of vibe?
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff I like. And if the Nile are, again, that's why I think maybe that's why I might be more intrigued than I thought of they have structure. If there again is a, we're going to take what we want. We're going to take this galaxy from you. And by the way, here's some of the things going wrong out here that you can't deny, Jedi. And even though, you know, you can break it down and find the right in it and find the wrong in what they're saying, on the surface, it just kind of creates that philosophical debate that you're talking about, Joseph. And I think that's kind of what makes a good Star Wars villain for me.
Yeah.
That makes any sense.
It does. It does. I think I think what I hear you describing is there's a lot of great villains start from this point where you can empathize with them because they're like, hey, I have a good point about a problem or hypocrisy that needs to be addressed. And you're like, good point, villain. And then the villain's like, and so I'm going to selfishly slaughter people and rage and not do anything to actually resolve the problem that I'm talking about. I'm just going to lash out because of it. And you get to go on this great roller coaster of like, you've brought up a problem that needs to be addressed. Oh, not like that. Not like that. And I feel like these villains are probably set up to do something similar like that.
Yeah, on this level. And Vader and Maul are a little different for me. Like Vader has a lot of what you're saying there too, but it's like already he's just he's his own tragedy, and the real villain to me is Palpatine, right? In a way,
right? Yeah, but I mean, by the prequels, you know, get to show us what Anakin's gone through. Right. You can empathize more with Vader, even though he's does horrific things.
Yeah, and oddly, we root for him at times, right? Maul, it's his own thing too. I have a lot of empathy for Maul too. It's why I think that powerful final moment with him and Obi-Wan in the Twin Suns episode of Rebels is great, but a little different. And I'll tell you what, more excited than I thought I would be for the Nile. And I already thought they looked cool, but I always want more than cool. I think we're going to get that, Joseph.
Yeah. I think my final thought is like, yeah, big Star Wars villainy. A lot of it has, you're doing a deep dive on the individual characters, some of the big ones we know, like Vader and Kylo. But there's also been always this sort of large, mechanized, rigid army, right? The endless sea of stormtroopers or battle droids. So I like that these are all creeping terrors, like literally creeping plants and pirates that can pop out of nowhere. And there isn't that same sort of a huge mechanization. And I think that makes them different. And I think it's always fun to meet the new villains because that we talked about it when we did our big Power of Evil or Power of the Dark Side deep dive type episode where, Star Wars is a fun place to safely play around with enjoying the darkness without actually doing anything too horrible. And it looks like it's going to be fun to, get to imagine yourself, being Manchi and Roe or imagine yourself being the Drengeer, but not actually do horrible things.
Speaking of cool villains in Star Wars, Thrawn is set to face a new enemy in Thrawn Ascendancy Greater Good. Greater Good. We got this. This is going to come out May the 4th, 2021, Star Wars Day in the new year. And let's read what we got here. Well, Thrawn's latest triumph still rests slowly on rests newly on his shoulders, despite leading the Chiss to victory and bringing glory to the House of Myth. The true threat to the Ascendancy has not yet been extinguished. Their foes do not send threats or ultimatums or mass ships on the edge of chaos. Their weapons come cloaked in smiles and generosity, gifts offered freely, services granted unconditionally. We got a political villain is what it is. I guess I can go on here. Sorry, I have more. Across the Ascendancy, seemingly inconsequential events could herald the doom of the Chiss as Thrawn and the expansionary defense fleet rally to uncover the enemy plot. They discover a chilling truth. Rather than invade Chiss capitals or pillage resources, this mysterious enemy strikes at the very foundation of the Ascendancy by widening the rifts between the 9 ruling families and 40 great houses below. As rivalry and suspicion sow discord among allies, each warrior must decide what matters most, the security of their family or their survival of the Ascendancy itself. As Varys would say, I want you to serve the realm. All right, here we go. Sorry, I forgot I had 2 paragraphs to read, Joseph, but a political villain type of stuff, which we know Thrawn's not great at dealing with. What do you think about this stuff?
Yeah, this I was really excited by this because it is different from some of the other Thrawn stuff we've seen. It pays off on some of the world building of the Chiss culture that I really did like in Chaos Rising. So I really like, yeah, that this whole description is basically like, here's a threat that Thrawn is just terrible at dealing with it, you know? Mm-hmm. So how will he deal with? And this is one of those places that creates tension because we know by the time he gets to the Empire, he's still not the best at politics and he still needs allies around him who kind of help him with that. So it's not like he's suddenly going to become a master of it in this book. So that'll be really interesting if he recognizes it's insidious plot where the enemy is, inside us, masquerading as us. How can I force that into an arena that I understand better in order to defeat them is really interesting to me. And then I also just like it is, I know that Timothy Zahn will have his own take on it, but mm-hmm. I like it when Zahn tackles themes that I think are really deep to Star Wars and puts his own stamp on them. And I like this theme of if the Chiss kind of on one hand realize we're being infiltrated, we're being played against one another, but also at the same time, I really don't want my family or my house to lose influence. It really gets this great Star Wars selfless versus selfish, you know, do you stand up for yourself or do you elevate the whole to be more important than the individual?
This is to me is a great use of what he set up with the Chiss Ascendancy and just the 9 ruling families and all those kind of things that were present in the first book of Chaos Rising. I am infinitely more intrigued by this, Joseph, than I was with the other villain and stuff going on in the book. We don't gravitate towards Thrawn as much as other people do, to be honest, but this sets up something really interesting to me and something I probably wanted from Thrawn, to have Thrawn really, really challenged. I just don't feel Thrawn is challenged often by, you know, all right, turn the cannons 4 degrees to the left. I studied the trash wastebasket and I love it. Great. I love it. I love it. Fine. Yes, it's great.
They do not understand right angles. And so, yeah.
For Thrawn to be confused, for Thrawn to be on his heels, it's politics because that's driven in. We hear that in every book that in a new canon, it is brought up at least 50 times. You're not really good at politics, Thrawn. I mean, you're good, Thrawn, but you ain't good at that stuff. Well, now let's drop him right into that water. Let's drop him in and great use of the ruling families and all these things that have been introduced to us here in the Chiss Ascendancy. I like that, man.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed Chaos Rising more than I expected to, even though it's still never going to be my favorite flavor of Star Wars. I enjoyed it that it dove into Thrawn's character a little bit more and that it really did great world building with the Chiss. So I'm really happy to see this story that's going in the directions of the things I really liked about that book.
Absolutely. It comes out May 4th, 2021, like I said, and yep, you guessed it. We'll be doing a deep dive in that future. Also, to celebrate 30 years of Thrawn, oh my gosh, 30 years of Thrawn, Del Rey and the company out of print are releasing a $150 price to go special edition of Chaos Rising. And they're also going to release a t-shirt. If you just want to get Heir to the Empire on a t-shirt, you can get that too. Probably not $150. There's nothing really to say about it, Joseph. That's quite a collection there. That's quite a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to save up my allowance for the book.
No, I'm not. But hey, 30 years of Thrawn, man, let's reflect on that. That's kind of crazy just from a standpoint of, I still remember the moment I plucked the paperback off the shelf at the grocery store in my hometown and said, "Oh, a new Star Wars book. Wow. 30 years. Woo." Thrawn, always, once he was introduced, he was kind of always there. It was one of those, have you read the new Star Wars books? No, I heard there's that Thrawn guy. Talk of, George is going to make more Star Wars movies. Maybe they'll do Episode 7 and Thrawn's the villain. I wanted Jack Nicholson to play him. I mean, there you go. It's the early 90s. What are you going to do? I won't even do it. And then now we got him coming back and triumphantly to new canon. Zahn returning as well. That's quite an impressive feat, what Thrawn's pulled off over 30 years, being present from just the pages of a book at first.
Yeah, no, I'm there with you. I got the hardcover. You know, I did save up my allowance. It's like, new Star Wars, what? And cracked that open. And then, you know, in those first pages, spoilers for a 30-year-old book, you know, Obi-Wan's like, "Well, I got to go. I can't talk to you anymore, but enjoy your hot chocolate." And I was, you know, I enjoyed the books, but I even that back then, long before I could ever imagine discussing Star Wars on, you know, a podcast, because they did not exist. There were some parts of that I was challenged by. I liked Thrawn. I thought Thrawn was cool, but I didn't have that. I know those books and Thrawn are, for a lot of people, that's their beginning for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've gone on this great journey where I always liked Thrawn, but he wasn't a big deal to me. And I really like Thrawn now. I like the Thrawn that has emerged in new canon. I like his performance in Rebels. The art thing is just endlessly fascinating to me, that really taking that idea that through our art, a lot of people are making an effort to make a statement with art, but that art is subconscious too, and that individuals and cultures could be making statements about themselves that they don't even realize they're making. And then here's this guy who's a military genius, but is not entirely in touch with his own emotions or with other characters, or, you know, other people, other sentient beings, but he can understand this limited idea of the way art connects to military choices. It's fascinating, and it's weird, and it makes you ask questions to me about, you know, yourself and our own culture. And then on top of that, it's just fun that he has developed into Space Sherlock Holmes, as people call him, and that you can get that joy of like, well, I know he's gonna beat everybody, and part of it is enjoying guessing how he did it and waiting for that paragraph where he's going to turn to his latest Watson and explain how he did it. And it's not always my favorite, but I've come to really enjoy that element of Thrawn.
Yeah. I mean, I've taken those jokes, those little swipes at it too, of just like, oh, I'll wait till Thrawn tells me what's going on. But I'm always waiting for it though. You know, that's my point. I'm always like, cool, I can't wait for the cool explanation to come, and I'm with you on that too. But yeah, Thrawn, Heir of the Empire, that whole series, that kept the flame going. I say that a lot because I want a lot of people to hear that. It is true. The legend stuff, the EU stuff, was Star Wars for a lot of people, even if that wasn't the case necessarily for me. It was for a lot of people, and I always celebrate any intro points into Star Wars. And Thrawn was... There was something I loved about him. I used to make some little quotes of his back in the early 90s. I was trying to be a real deep high school kid. it's as Grand Admiral Thrawn said, if I may. But, you know, he does do what you described, and they really use it quite well in the modern stuff and Rebels, of just using this character to kind of go into our own personal philosophies and how we act and our natures, and can you go against your nature? Is it impossible? Quite frankly, this sounds like a joke. It's like modern baseball stats that are so broken down where they're like, we know you might want to hit to left field, but you can't. So all of our fielders are going to be over here. And that's something that's new to the baseball because of computers and technology and everything. Computers, I said that like an old man. But I see that in Thrawn too. Jokes aside, where he's just like, I've studied you. I know you. And you're going to be you. And can you, to win, you might have to do something, as we see with Ezra, you might have to do something that I just can't get from you, that I just can't connect with. That's interesting. And that's a good use of Thrawn right now. And I like that. So yay, Thrawn.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very happy for the Thrawn renaissance, for people who are coming to him now, and for people who have been fans of him for 30 years.
30 years. It is crazy. Well, that is our look at Star Wars news right now. Like I said, quiet week, but a lot to discuss. A lot of things. What makes a good villain and the philosophies of Star Wars? A lot of it all in this week's news. So we are going to move on. But before we do, we're going to take a quick break. And before that, remind you that we have an audiobook we think you should try out. Joseph, what do we got this week?
We are going to recommend the entire Aftermath trilogy by Chuck Wendig for reasons.
That is... for reasons. There you go. Download your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, we are going to take a quick break and come back to answer your questions here on Force Center.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Welcome back to 4Center. We have done the news. Now we're going to get to those cues. We have some questions from you folks in the audience. Joseph, let's get to it.
Yeah, great questions as always from both Twitter and Patreon. We're going to start at Twitter. We've got a question from Jay from Nowhere. Jay says, would Tarkin in Rogue One have played better as a holo projection throughout the film? I've always felt that would have compensated for the uncanny valleyness of it and kept the focus on the character and not the behind-the-scenes work put into it. Ken, where do you land on the great Tarkin uncanny valley debate? Would you have preferred just hologram Tarkin? Where you at?
At the risk of sounding like I'm being a contrarian, I did not have a problem with it and had a slight yeah, that was kind of weird after the first. I was just surprised they did it to the level, right? I thought, oh, he's going to be a reflection in that mirror when he's looking out the window, when he's looking out of the Death Star, and they go for it. I still think he belongs in that story. Tarkin needed to be there, and they took a big risk technologically, and that's a Star Wars thing, man. That's a tradition. So I like it. I think the Leia one works a little less for me at the end. I would love to see them maybe try to do that now. I mean, technologies have obviously gotten better, including deepfake. Not that I want them to do that, but I mean, it's just scary what you can do with that. As far as Tarkin, I actually really enjoy it. I don't get lost in an uncanny valley. I do want other things and other properties and even some Star Wars stuff. Not so much with that one. That's just a me thing, I guess.
Okay, I want to make sure I'm on top of this headline. Are you advocating a special edition of Rogue One to update the technology?
I'm not opposed to it.
You're not opposed to it. Interesting. Yeah. Yep. That's really fascinating when you're looking at technology and saying like, oh, do you know, I think people would be okay with it if you always had access to the original. So you had that sort of historical document as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a big debate. Yeah. I mean, the Leia one's fine. And again, I'm glad she's there. Again, they took a big swing. Look what they did in Rise of Skywalker. I think for the most part that worked under real tough circumstances. So I'm always okay for it. Okay with it. But as far as Jay from Nowhere's holo protection, yeah, I could see that too. It just, I think it would have been more obvious to, I don't know, like it would have been more obvious that's not, you don't have Thrawn, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, you don't have Tarkin. Yeah.
Thrawn. God, he's still in my mind. Thrawn, that's what Thrawn does. He just gets in. Some would argue that the way they went with Tarkin, it was more obvious that it wasn't, he wasn't actually real, but I know some people who were like, yeah, my girlfriend or my mom or my dad were like, they didn't know, they thought that guy had died.
Yeah. Like how'd he get there? Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm mostly in agreement with you on all of it. I think the Leia is rougher for me, and I could have seen that shot working just from having power from the back, from that, just kind of the iconic silhouette. Mm-hmm. But yeah, big swings. Yeah, in my experience, exactly the same as you, is talking with other people about Tarkin. Some people are like, whoa, no, that's Uncanny Valley. And other people are like, what do you mean? I thought that was, you know, I thought that guy aged really well since 1977. but, or there are people who just like aren't that deep into it and just like didn't know at all. So clearly there's something fascinating going on with different people's perception of Tarkin and perception of, you know, what does look real to us and what doesn't. For me, there's something about his mouth that like it moves a little bit more to me than a human mouth moves, of just like, not a human mouth, but that human mouth. So like that's where I perceive it. So for me, it definitely is a little bit in the Uncanny Valley. But for other people I've talked to, it is not in the Uncanny Valley at all. So I think my big answer to Jay from Nowhere's question is, I think if they had gone with the hologram, I think for some people that would have been like, yeah, that works a lot better because you've got a little bit of a buffer from the Uncanny Valley. But for people who didn't perceive the Uncanny Valley, I think they'd really dislike that. Because like, why can't that guy take a meeting? Krennic flew all the way to Mustafar for a like 3-minute meeting. And Tarkin's not physically on the Death Star when he's trying to take command of it. I think the hologram would have bugged some other people. So I think this is one for me where me just individually as a viewer, Tarkin is in the Uncanny Valley, but I don't care because it is such a big part of the Star Wars tradition to, you know, take a big swing at, you know, to mix my metaphors, take a big swing at pushing the technological envelope. That's such a part of the heritage of Star Wars is let's try something new. It's fine with me that he's for me a little bit in the Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, I can do it. I can live with it. Yeah.
Excellent. We're going to move on to our next question. Our next question comes from a person who sends in great questions, great thoughts, a longtime listener whose name I am never able to say exactly correctly, and I apologize. So I will take another swing, push that envelope of my mouth technology. Yuval Aisler. Yuval says, with the excitement for the High Republic rising, if indeed it will be a success, I would like to see it expand to the screen. So my question is, would you want to keep it a reading experience and in your imagination, or see it on the screen, animated or live action? Ken, when are you with this? A lot of people, I think, have been hearing this bubbling of, as High Republic excitement builds, people are either like, it should be on the screen, or I think it's going to be on the screen. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, look, with the amount of energy they've put into making it, you know, creating this world and the think tanks and the teams, I can understand going, well, just go straight to the movies. But the publishing is definitely a different medium. It's a different way to tell the story. I just was talking about this week on Spotlight Star Wars of just, you know, comics are comics and novels are novels. And it's just different ways to tell a Star Wars story that is unique to itself. And so I'm excited to see this world and the lore that they're, you know, added into, and people love lore in Star Wars. They're adding to what we know, and they're creating its own world and own lore within this time period. I think that kind of needs to happen on the page. I'm more interested in that right now, and then seeing where you can take the films. But to Yuval Aisler's, I've always said that wrong too. take that to go to his question. I think down the line, yeah, that just makes some sense. But I wonder if there's going to be, and it's easier to do this on a show or a movie, but I wonder if there's going to be like breakout characters where we're all just like, oh, Bur Yaga, man, that Wookiee Padawan, like I want a series of his adventures. Like, you know, a lot of these Padawans as they become Jedi. Like, I don't quite know how long the High Republic stories, the books and everything are planned, you know, or that this is a 2-3 year project, or is this going forward where we're always going to have a High Republic book once a year or something like that? I don't quite know that answer. I haven't been tracking that. Maybe other people know that answer, but eventually there's going to be a call. If it works, it's going to be a call for live action. And I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think they announced like a second round of books, like one or two. Right. Yes. So I think really indicating that the plan is for this to go for a while. And I think that's a big part of it for me, that I'd be happy to see animated or maybe even live action or anything on the screen in the far flung future. But for me, the mission of this is so clearly not only let's come up with a story that makes sense to be in publishing, that makes sense to be books and comics, like you are wisely saying, Ken, but also like the screen Star Wars storytelling is always going to be a little bit in flux. It's always going to be a little bit in response to the demands and the changes of technology and Hollywood. And I think the screen storytelling is always also going to be the, you know, the final say. It's going to be the big thing. So I think part of the whole creation of High Republic is let's really give the publishing arm a bunch of elbow room to just tell their own story and take it wherever it goes and not worry about like, oh, we were building up to this, but now we're not actually doing that television show that we were building up to, or, you know, now that television show is actually a movie and all that kind of stuff that can happen when the publishing side is kind of supporting the screen side. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to just let them have their elbow room to tell the stories for a while in the publishing side. I also, we get this question a lot too. I would really love to see them for the screen, particularly an animated version, start adapting some of the great books that are out there. And I think that might be a great stepping stone. I'd be thrilled if, yeah, the High Republic's rolling along as a publishing concern. Those characters are emerging as absolute fan favorite characters. At the same time, Leia, Princess of Alderaan, and Rebel Rising and Lords of the Sith are, you know, one shot animated in canon. Disney Plus movies, movie events, and starts to build that world where this is a natural thing that happens in the land of Star Wars. And then, you know, you get a couple of years into High Republic and you know, like kind of High Republic phase one. So you can, you know, do a movie adaptation of it, you know, kind of looking back. That would be, to me, the path that would be the most satisfying as a fan.
Once you start talking though about adapting things, canon junkies, beware. Beware, little details can get lost along the way.
Some tweaks will be made along the way. The other thing about this High Republic question, which I think is so great, and I was thinking about it when we were talking about Thrawn, I'm so excited to see the generation of fans that this is going to be their Star Wars, right? That there's going to be so many comics and books to immerse yourself in that I think we're going to see this new generation of like, yeah, where were you, original trilogy, prequel trilogy? And like, I'm a High Republic fan. That's where I started.
Yeah, no, that's great. And look, I want there to be a clamoring for a live action or an animated version of High Republic, because that means these are home runs, you know, if that's the case. So I'm excited for that day. And you're right. There's going to be a time where like, oh, I got handed the High Republic, Yoda and the Adventures of the Young Padawans, Volume 2 and Phase 2 of the High Republic. That was the first Star Wars book I got. And wow, what a world. So it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. The Nile are the coolest villains in Star Wars ever. Right. Great question. Thank you for those two Twitter questions. We're going to move on to some patrons from Patreon. First up, Gregory Jensen. Gregory says, I just watched The Phantom Menace the other day and I was taken aback by Queen Amidala's deft political maneuvers throughout the film. The next time we see the Queen on screen, Anakin is a teenager. I would love to see a book, comic, or miniseries based on Amidala's rule of Naboo between The Phantom Menace and The Clone Wars. What are your thoughts on this period of time in the galaxy, and what would you like to see from a Queen Amidala-based series in this time period? Great question, great thought, Gregory. Queen Amidala is moving and shaking politically, as it were, in The Phantom Menace. So I wanted to take this question because I think it's a great opportunity for us to plug some books that we like and then talk about what more we would want to see from Queen Amidala. So we got those two E.K. Johnston books that exist now. Queen's Peril, which is really the start of her career, right as she is elected queen. And then we have Queen's Shadow, which is right at the end of her career as queen and the beginning of her career as senator. So we can recommend those to anybody who hasn't checked those out and are hankering for more Amidala. We think highly of those books. But then, Ken, what other Amidala storytelling do you want to see?
Yeah, first, echoing your thoughts on those books. I mean, those are two books I have kind of pinned to reread out of all. There's so many Star Wars books, and I think that Catalyst, Rebel Rising, I'm like, yeah, it's getting to the point where I kind of want to revisit those books. It's been a few years for some of them, you know, and those two are on top of the list. I just think they're fun, insightful and quick reads and in a good way. And I think you take that kind of spirit into a show that kind of what Gregory is talking about. If you were to do a limited, Amidala, the Disney Plus series, 10 episodes, 8 episodes of that period of time, post Phantom Menace to the end of her term and going to be a senator, which is where what Queen Shadow picks up. And just, you know, would it be earth shattering? What's she dealing with during that time? It's not Sith. It's not separatists. The politics, again, this, I always say, you know, one of the big important things she's done is integrating two societies that did not like each other. And at some point stopped talking or working or functioning or treating each other as beings worthy of coming to the table over. Like that was pretty big for Amidala to realize this is what we need to do. Work with the Gungans and, you know, let the Gungans know that we don't think we're above them. You know, you could have a lot of that, the fallout of that. That's probably not an easy transition for everyone in Naboo, right? That's probably right. Not. Oh yeah. Good point. I mean, there's going to be some fights there. We know stuff with her and Panaka and the defense, and are we a pacifist culture and country and planet and nation, or what are we? Like, we just went through an invasion. We got to be careful. And there seems to be some divergence between her and Panaka and some others, even her own family, about that. So it's smaller scale storytelling in Star Wars, perfect for a Disney Plus series. Maybe a smaller percentage of people would want to watch that, Joseph. They hear Star Wars and politics and they groan. But Amidala has a entire generation of fans behind her. Those prequel kids love Amidala. And you and I are trying to make sure that other generations, the ones maybe came before, love Amidala for what she did and what she means to the story. So it could have its place.
Yeah, absolutely. The Queen's Peril and the Queen's Shadow book are both great, but there is that room, like you're talking about, maybe even for a book that's Queen's Reign of, you know, right in the heart of, you know, is there a specific political crisis that, you know, rises up over one of those great ideas of the Gungans, and, you know, how do we protect Naboo but not give in to fear, all those kind of things. It's I think would make a great book, and who knows, E.K. Johnson could be writing Queen's Reign as we speak. I think for me, the time period that I'd be interested in to see, you know, if it was an animated short or, you know, a short Disney Plus series or however it emerges on screen, either some of Amidala's time as a senator before the Clone Wars, or honestly, I think I'd love something that's really centered on Amidala during the Clone Wars. And mm-hmm. I know during the Clone Wars animated series, we definitely get to spend time with Padme. We get to spend time with her on kind of separate adventures. We do see more of her relationship with Anakin. We do see more of her relationship with Ahsoka. We do see her political frustrations and her doubts and her fears and her attempts to get things back on the right course. Clone Wars is, you know, often whiz-bang adventure. And I think there'd be room for like a political adventure that's really, maybe even toward the end of the Clone Wars, that's really Padme staring into the dawning horror of how bad things have gotten. And again, we get bits and pieces of that. But, you know, honestly, some political adventure that does have some action, that is Padme's dark time of the soul, really close to Revenge of the Sith, where the focus is her and her alone, and she's wrestling with the reality of how bad things have gotten with the Senate, and wrestling with her relationship with Anakin, you know, because we always get bits and pieces, and E.K. Johnson's done such a great job into diving into her head in different time periods. But I'd love that same level of depth given to Padme's perspective on the relationship and how much she loves him, but how much she knows it's been a risk, and how she's kind of, is her feelings about her own relationship and her own choices affecting how she's feeling about the galaxy and what her hopes are for Anakin, what her hopes are for the Jedi, all that kind of stuff. I think there's a lot of room to explore something interesting there.
I think it would be tremendously important that one day we get that perspective of Padme during that time and those relations, everything you're describing. And because Queen's Peril did such a good job of going, up and into the Phantom Menace, the movie we know and have known for years, and giving you some stories around the corner in such an inventive and fun way for me, Yeah, I'd be willing to start a hashtag for E.K. Johnston to write, I don't know, The Queen's End. Is that too sad of a story of a title? You know, it could have some meaning there. Anyways, yeah, I great point, Joseph. I just think that there's a lot there in that era for Padme.
Yeah. Yeah, Queen's Legacy. How about?
There we go. That's a more positive take. Good old grumpy Ken's a Queen's End killer. Queen's Legacy. I like that.
No, not too grumpy at all. Great question, Gregory. And if you're interested, I hope you check out those books. They are fast, fun reads, and they do connect to like a lot of juicy, fun Star Wars canon. Particularly, I think if you're a fan of Phantom Menace, Queen's Peril is fascinating. Move on to our final question from Dan Uphoff. Dan has some thoughts, as we really like. We really like these essay form questions from our Patreon listeners. So he's got some thoughts, and then we will answer the question that emerges from the thoughts. Dan says, in your recent episode of Star Wars Ranked, you discussed your favorite Luke Skywalker moments. Hearing you discuss all of Luke's heroic moments made me think about the main hero of the sequel trilogy, Rey, and her heroic moments by comparison. It occurred to me that Luke had several fist-pumping heroic moments where he was in a tense, hold-your-breath, edge-of-your-seat, dangerous situation, only to gloriously come out on top. The specific moments that stick out in my mind are him narrowly escaping the Wampa in the cave on Hoth, and him turning the tables on Jabba and company while on the plank of the sail barge. Maybe you can help me out, but I can't recall Rey having such moments, at least not in the films. Of course, she has countless heroic moments over all three films, and she saves the entire galaxy. But does she have any of those swashbuckling heroic adventure moments when she was in imminent danger, like the ones I mentioned from Luke? Of course, she doesn't need them to be the incredible character that she is, but I thought it was an interesting comparison. Can you think of any moments I'm missing, or what are your thoughts on this in general? So great thoughts from Dan to be looking at that sort of Star Wars poetry of there are heroic moments for all the different characters, but do they feel different? Do they look different? How? Why? All that kind of thing. So, Ken, let's dive into the heroic moments, the kind of swashbuckling moments that we think are there for Rey, and then why they may or may not feel different.
Yeah, I think, again, Dan, I appreciate Dan's question here a lot, and he ends up and he's clearly in a very positive spot about the character of Rey. I think I get what he's saying in terms of just on a beat by beat moment, they're a little different because I'm going to, you know, as you're reading the question, I'm going to, well, you know, the duel with Kylo on Ilum on Starkiller Base is a pretty heroic moment. And Dan saying, hey, she has them, but, you know, swashbuckling kind of moments, you know, escaping Kylo's capture with the, you know, with Daniel Craig stormtrooper there. I know some people back in the day were like, oh, it happened too fast. I think that was a great moment of her just like, I got to try this something new, get out of it. Running with Finn, the escaping in the Falcon is a fist pumping moment. I remember the first couple times I saw that in the theater, and that included cynical press crowds. When Finn shoots that TIE fighter, you know, because the gun stuck, the belly gun stuck, and she does the trick, and the Falcon gets into position, and boom, and he shoots it. People cheer, man.
Yeah,
and so that's a Finn moment and it's a Rey moment. So I think some of that stuff exists for me. I think I'm going to some stuff in Rise of Skywalker too. Again, the big stuff. I get what Dan's saying, but I go to facing down Palpatine, pretty swashbuckling, fighting the play a heart song Barracuda in the background of the throne room scene in Snoke, and you got that's a swashbuckling moment for me too. So, anyways, I'll stop and let you jump in here, Joseph.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that she does have a lot of to me big adventure swashbuckling moments. Flying the Falcon and lining up that shot for Finn. I think catching the saber in The Force Awakens and that big reveal and then going to the end where she connects the Force and finds her power and, you know, does the big pushes saber down and does the slash. I think that's a big heroic moment, saving her own life. I think catching the saber in The Last Jedi is a big fist pumping moment when it slides out of Snoke and right into her hand. And then even her victory right there at the end over that Praetorian guard, where she does the cool drop and slash move with the lightsaber drop, re-catch and slash. I think the Rise of Skywalker, I honestly think for me, one of the biggest, my favorite action moments in Star Wars, you know, up there with Luke flipping off the sail barge and catching his lightsaber, is her knowing Kylo's coming, taking that deep breath, you know, and, you know, getting ready, doing the quick turn to the camera, the run, the leap, the slash, and she takes down the ship. That's really cool. fist pumping, swashbuckling moment to me. Hitting the three ties in one in The Last Jedi, you know, when Chewie's flying over Crait and she takes all three out of them, three of them out at once. And we get the shot of her in the gunner seat and she's like, I like this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, and the defeating Palpatine, that, you know, the both blades come to her hand. I am all the Jedi, you know, holding the line and forcing the lightning back on him. That's a big heroic moment to me. So I think there are heroic moments, but I think to maybe kind of, I think there are moments where the sequel trilogy just is different from the original trilogy, because of the way it is constructed. I think the sequel trilogy is always in touch with, the past, that gives it this slight flavor where all like, this is hard to way to say it, because I think every moment in original trilogy does have meaning, and we could talk about and have talked about like the thematic meaning of the Luke's escape from the Wampa and his great flip and catch a lightsaber, and they are meaningful. But the sequel trilogy has even more focus on how like each kind of step that Rey takes is her trying to find her place and her trying to find her power and her trying how to use her power. And there's a lot of emotion built up in them. So the moments of victory aren't, it's hard to see them as just kick ass and divorce them from what they mean to her emotional journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's maybe the best way to say what I'm feeling. And other people, of course, might absolutely disagree. It's a kind of a big one to tackle, but I feel like that's what it is there are moments to me that are absolutely just, I'm watching an adventure movie and the hero kicked ass,
yeah.
But I feel like they're always deeply tied also to the personal and the emotional.
Yeah, I'm struggling because it's a big topic and maybe speaks to why some people don't gravitate towards the sequel trilogy as much as other trilogies, right? You know, and I think it is constructed different. There's a Jabba sail barge sequence, right? One of my favorite. It's one of my favorite that made me a fan. I think that is more its own story, its own action. I think there's some things to it. You and I could definitely probably connect all the lessons Luke learns from that. We could have fun with that. But it's also, you got to go rescue your friends, and you do it. And yippee-ki-yay, blank, blank. I mean, it's like, it's fun in its own thing. And there's the sequel trilogy is, it has to be because we're all so aware of what came before. It had to structure how it unveiled its heroes and what they did and the story in a different way. And we also expect a lot more out of our stories now as an audience and everything. We look for more meaning or connections or predictions to come true. When back then there was a little bit, particularly Return of the Jedi, you know, you're in 83 now, and We're in a new era of modern action coming out of the 70s, you know, French Connection days. Now we're in the Rambo days, and not saying, and George's message was to go against that. That's what we know where Luke ends up. But that opening sail barge sequence I'd go to a lot here is like, yeah, that was great. It was totally Douglas Fairbanks jumping on a pirate ship and all that kind of stuff. It was that. It had deeper meaning, but it was that. And I took that to the playground, not the, I wonder what, if that was in line with the philosophy of the Jedi. I wonder, you know, none of that was in my head.
No.
The original trilogy had went for more of that a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is in line with what you're thinking, but I'm feeling what I think you're saying.
Yeah. Like, I think in particular, the Jabba sail barge scene, I think we talked about this on the Star Wars Ranked episode. I feel like it is watching Luke, walk that Jedi path. He tries everything else, mm-hmm. you know, from money to, sneaking Han out to everything, to verbal warnings, free us or die. He tries to walk that Jedi path until he has no other choice. But then that moment with Luke doing the flip and getting the saber is very straightforward. What's at stake is, Han thinks he's still this kid who needs saving. And we, the audience, know he has become the knight. And now the knight has his sword and he's going to rescue his friend. And that is that moment. And I think that there are moments that are utterly triumphant for Rey, but I think they are different because I think, you know, the knight has her sword in The Force Awakens, but she's not sure she knows how to use it. She's just beginning her first step. You know, the knight has her sword when it flies to her in the throne room, but there's that ambiguity of like, is Kylo on her side now? Well, let's
just pause this question while they fight for their lives. And it's thrilling, but it's thrilling in a different way because there's this complexity to it. And I would argue, even in The Rise of Skywalker, where she is fully formed, she has become a Jedi. She is representing the Jedi. She, you know, 1,000 generations live in her. When she's got those two sabers, it's there's so much legacy, you know, there's so much else going on, as well as her triumph as the knight with two swords, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, look, and I'll tell you what, some of my favorite quote unquote swashbuckling moments might even be from Finn in the sequel trilogy. He's kind of got that kind of adventure to me. That's just for me, maybe. Where I just think of that like individual, like cool, like yes, action, got it, good. And Rey has those, but in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah. And you touched on this a little bit with the mind trick. And that was the other thing that I wanted to kind of point out is I feel like the entire sequel trilogy is so aware of the different kinds of victories that heroes can have in Star Wars. And again, not like the original trilogy isn't, but I think since the sequel trilogy is kind of commenting on the original trilogy in some ways, that there's almost more of them, that some of Rey's favorite heroic moments for me are triumphs of a different kind, you know, like when she does do the mind trick to the Daniel Craig stormtrooper, or you know, when she chooses to do the super powerful mind trick to First Order troopers in Rise of Skywalker, when she lifts the rocks in Last Jedi and has that moment of like, no, just having power really matters and it can save your friends, when she chooses not to hack the Vexus apart but instead give it a little bit of life and, you know, heal its wounds. Those are all kind of fist pumping moments for me of true heroism from Rey. But they aren't necessarily swashbuckling. They're, peace buckling.
Yes. I know what you mean. And again, probably begs a deeper discussion, gets into just off camera, behind the scenes, what do you gravitate to in Star Wars? And they are a little different, even though there's poetry. They're different.
Yeah. Yeah, so lots of great moments for Luke and Rey, right? That's what our answer is, ultimately.
Yeah, totally. Which is definitely what Dan is asking about and suggesting, too, but different flavors there.
Yeah. So great question, Dan. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to do a little mini version of Star Wars Ranked Favorite Rey Moments. I'm sure we'll do a longer one at some point, because, our Luke Skywalker moments included some moments of swashbuckling action, but also that Star Wars Ranked also did have lots of moments where we're like, that weren't about swashbuckling.
Yeah, and well, absolutely. Yeah, the Rey Star Wars Ranked on the way.
That is right. So thank you, Dan. Thank you, Gregory. Thank you, Yuval. Thank you, Jay from Nowhere. All great and interesting questions this week, as always. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you for all reaching out. And if you out there want to give us a follow and keep up to date on what we're doing, you can do so by going to Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can go to our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Subscribe on YouTube over there. Always working on other things, you know, to put up on YouTube. And we appreciate those who want us on there more, want to see our faces. We're working on some of those things, too.
Working on our faces.
Podcasts available in a lot of different spots, including right now Amazon Music. New over there. If you want to take your podcast in over there, we are on there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And at patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us. We are always excited to welcome new patrons. And there's a lot of cool little rewards there. But I think one of the best things, you get plugged right into our private Discord community, where we can have some just good old fun celebrating Star Wars, at times questioning Star Wars in a good, productive way, and just finding friends in the Force over there. Going up at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Any level of support gets you into that Discord. We've got our own stuff as well. KatNapsok.com is where you can find me, or at KatNapsok. Where can they find you, Joseph?
Yeah, you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for other comedy adventures, comedy albums, my other podcast, Obsessed. This week I had a really fun conversation on Obsessed with my wife, Sarah, about The Mandalorian, and hearing about it from her perspective. It's always fun to talk Star Wars with my wife, who really loves Star Wars, but, you know, doesn't do hours of podcasts every week about it, so has a little bit more of that sort of big picture step back view. So that was really fun to do. And then you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. And then the last thing I'll plug is, if you're listening to this podcast on the day that it comes out, November 3rd, and you're in America, I think voting's great.
Voting is a good thing.
I think, you know, yeah, having your voice heard, using your power, I like those things.
Those are good things to do as well. And yeah, an important week in the real world. So we thank you all for listening to us during this time to get a little Star Wars joy in your life. It is always good to just have all areas of your life fire in all cylinders. Get involved, get educated, get in there, vote, like Joseph's been saying, and I've been echoing, and also enjoy some little fun Star Wars too along the way.
Yeah.
So that is it for this week. We will see you on Thursday and beyond for Ray and Luke and all of the swashbuckling moments in Star Wars. We'll see you next time. This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there. Especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.